Right now it is time to bring in our good friends from the Lakeville Journal. In the other studio, we have Cynthia Hoswinter. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
And Ann is in there as well. Ann, good morning.
Good morning.
There she is.
In here, hat on, ready to roll.
And there is?
And there is Janet Manco. Good morning, Janet. How are you, Janet?
Hi.
All right. Well, we are all set for this week to look at the Lakeville Journal. And, of course, I see a lot of yellow on the front page here now. Any significance for the yellow, or was just that just the
color? Well, you know, we try to mix up the colors because people sometimes can't remember when they go to the newsstand whether they have that issue, so we try to do a different color. But Bernie Drew, who's our front page editor, I think saw the yellow in the shirt of Francois Clemens and the yellow of the house, the little pump station or whatever
and
it is.
And so that made yellow.
And so he was like, let's do yellow this week.
There we go.
Which is not a color we normally do.
All right. But. Well, so now we'll go right to the top, and that is the page about Cornwall and, once again, the Planning and Zoning Commission.
So people get so, I'm certain that people are tired of me saying this, but the town plan is the most important thing we do in our towns to keep them looking the way that we like them, which is rural and adorable and low industry. And the way that we legislate that is through our town plans. And the state requires us to do a town plan every 10 years for every town. And if you don't do one, they take away your state grants. So they really mean it and have some teeth behind it. And it's a publication of the Planning and Zoning Commission, which means the town plan does not have to be approved at town meeting. It's only approved by vote of the Planning and Zoning Commission members. So sometimes town plans are just a slight revision and update every 10 years. And sometimes there's a deep revision of it, as they're doing in Cornwall right now. And then the Planning and Zoning Commission invites people to come in and sort of, and they say to them, like, well, what do you like about your town? What do you not like? What would you like to see happening? Would you like to have more industry so we have lower taxes? Or would you like to have more conservation? Or would you like to have more affordable housing? And Cornwall people are usually pretty involved in how their town is run. So they had an early session meeting where people were asked to come in and express their opinions to planning and zoning about what their town should be like. And then once they work these into the town plan, then the town planning and zoning regulations will be updated to match what's in that town plan. So the reason I'm giving such a long, boring explanation of this is when your town does the town plan, you should totally go and express your opinion. It's very, very important.
All right. Now, I just want to know, what the hell is John Harney doing out at a sub-zero morning?
That's John, isn't it?
Taking pictures of ice.
He probably went kayaking after that. That's John Harney all over. He loves to be out in nature. John just is, I think he knows, he must know every square inch of the Northwest Corner. And he's been out because he's a realtor and actually has a column that's starting this week that Janet will, I'm sure, talk about. So he's out all the time in small planes and with drones, looking at property from the air, because that's really what he loves, is property. And he got this incredible photos. I've seen, you know, I love to take photos of the falls. I've never seen it like this. Really extraordinary photo, and he'd posted it on his Instagram, and so we snagged it for the paper as well.
All right. Now, a little box right on your front page, and that Maria Horn has withdrawn her racetrack proposal, her actual piece of legislation. It's not withdrawn, but she told them not to take it up because she's already, you know, it's submitted and you can't withdraw it until they really go in. But she told them that she's been assured it's not going to be taken up.
And so what this is Maria Horn, who is our new state rep and really jumped into the job with both feet, immediately proposed legislation that would have allowed towns to regulate the hours of auto racing in their town. So essentially that really mostly applies to Salisbury. And there's also a case going to the state Supreme Court revolving around the Planning and Zoning Commission, the town of Salisbury, and Limerick Park. But she wanted to get this in the docket because you have to, like, put it in the chute at the beginning of the legislative season if you want it to be discussed. And I don't know if she was surprised by it or not, but a lot of conversation about this on Facebook. And something that we don't always hear at the paper, which is a lot of people speaking very pro-track and sort of saying, hey, you know, let's not rush into limiting hours there. So she has withdrawn it for now, and nothing could really have been done with it until the state Supreme Court case is completed. So I suspect that we'll be hearing more about this in the future.
Yeah, and there's a meeting tonight, by the way, at the Falls Village Firehouse. I think it's 6:30 is when it starts.
And it's Maria is trying to get to all the towns and let people express their opinions. And it seemed like this meeting initially was going to be hijacked by conversation about the track and may, in fact, still be. But, yeah, but everybody's invited. You don't have to be a Falls Village resident.
No. That's right.
But I think you don't have to be a Falls Village resident or a Salisbury resident to talk about the track. That's the interesting thing about Lime Rock Park. It is brings so much money into this area. It really does affect every other town in the area. It really does. It's a pretty amazing.
So it's a worthy conversation.
Yeah.
So it'll be a worthy conversation.
As is often surprising to people, is there are two legitimate sides to this and many other conversations.
Well, I also said that to the people who objected to this legislation going in. I said, well, you know, if some of Maria Horn's proposed residents asked her to do this, well, then, you know what?
Yeah, it's like if you're elected by a bunch of people, you got to
do it. I mean, she'll put the legislation forward and see what the state says.
At least we'll discuss it. Yeah. Like, at least it's a conversation.
Yeah. All right. Now, speaking about a conversation, you know, pickup trucks are probably 65% of the vehicles that are on our roads nowadays.
Yeah.
Really. People buy pickup trucks and sport utility vehicles. And the safe navigation, you've got a nice story here on about that.
So we had been doing a ton of safe driving stories this year because, you know, there were 11 fatals last year, and some in pickups and some in regular cars. And Lance Christensen, who's a very good driver and a great photographer and an experienced driver, has gone to two events that were sponsored, actually speaking of Lime Rock Park, by Lime Rock Park. And generously, they invited us to come to these. The last one was, you know, regular cars, and was actually sponsored by the Chevrolet dealer, the Ford dealer in Millerton. And this one was sponsored by Chevrolet. And they brought out their new Silverado pickup trucks and gave people a chance to drive them. And Lance went and shared some of the lessons they got on how to drive more safely in pickups, because even though they're so big, they aren't necessarily safer. And a lot of it depends on what tires you've got on them. And most important, as with all driving, is that you're paying attention. But definitely do read the story, whether you're a pickup driver or not. But chances are you are a pickup driver. A lot of good tips in there.
Yeah. All right.
I love that photo of the tire tread. Yeah. That is a tire.
That's a gnarly tire.
Well, I've got those on my Jeep.
Well done. Yes, of course.
The cheapest you can go is $100.
Yes.
All right. Officer Clemens shares memories of Mr. Rogers.
I know, it's so sweet. He was he played the police officer in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And, of course, we're all talking about Mr. Rogers lately because of that excellent documentary. And the man who played Officer Clemens for many, many years on the TV show, and is an area resident, came and spoke at the Norfolk Library, not only about his experiences with Mr. Rogers, which I am relieved to say he thought he was a wonderful man and a visionary, and also about how he felt about a person who grew up in an inner city rough neighborhood, and maybe people in his community didn't really feel a lot of affection for their police officers, and that was part of the Mr. Rogers thing was, you know, let's try to look at these people as people who are there to help us, and Officer Clemens, part of that process. So, interesting story.
All right. So, here we go. Now, on page two, you got a little dog jumping through the snow. And, boy, are you going to be deluged.
Lola.
Wait, you're going to be deluged.
That's not any little dog.
That's not any little dog.
That's my dog.
That's well, right. Beautiful little dog.
Put it this way.
And you've got her airborne.
She loves to jump. What I like this, here's, you've got, you're going to get a deluge of pictures now.
Well, you know, often we do, but we've been sort of putting little notes in the paper for the last month saying, like, send us pictures of your dogs in the snow. And we haven't gotten any. So, we had Anne go out. Her dog is the leapiest, bounciest little dog you've ever seen. And so we are hoping that people will send us photos of their dogs in the snow.
All right. Now
the snow's almost gone now right now. Do we do dogs in the rain? That's a little different,
no, we
right?
never. We tried doing wet dogs once. In summer, yeah. We did swimming pool dogs.
Right.
But it's going to snow again. I'm so sorry to say this. But.
See, Anne, now your dog is jumping like that and running because it saw the bobcat tracks. And right. Also, it was worried about those two coyotes.
we could make that case, but that's not really true. This was a different day.
The dog scares the bobcat.
I just think that you know, those three all go together.
What is it, paper, scissors, rock?
They all came in through Anne, who's going to have to be writing our Nature Notebook column soon.
All right. So now, state trash regulations. No kidding, impacting both Salisbury and Sharon.
Yes, but not affecting North Canaan. So it's always interesting. Part of the reason why we're ganging our government stories on the same page is that people in these towns, it's incredible to me how much they don't talk to each other. So it's interesting to know that because we have a combined transfer station and we have a higher number of users, and also because there's a very high volume of trash, the new regulations are going to impact Sharon and Salisbury, where we are building a new transfer station, as I'm sure you all know. But they're not going to affect North Canaan, which, surprisingly, is not recycling as much, which is not sending in as much trash for the general trash hopper as we are in the combined Salisbury-Sharon transfer station, which actually has a very good record for recycling. And I think people probably know Cornwall has one of the highest. Cornwall and the Salisbury-Sharon have the highest recycling rates in the state. But North Canaan, you know, gold star for them. So they will not be affected, but trash rates are going to be increasing at the Salisbury-Sharon station because of these new state regulations.
All right. Now, the Region 1 calendar gets the okay. I don't know, and this is something that I want to complain about here about this meeting. Seven people sent in letters to the Board of Education.
Right.
And they were not read.
Into that.
Bob Whalen chose upon himself not to read them. Every other time there's letters, they're read. I think this is something that has to be looked into. I mean, the calendar got the eventual okay, but, you know, the board should hear and the public should hear, because we tape those meetings, the people that are concerned about the calendar.
Yes, I am agreed. There's always that issue with that board about public, and it's like they just don't see it happening year after year. It's incredible about that board and how hostile they appear to be to the public and how uninterested they appear to be in people's opinions, and that's discouraging. So, yes, there's a conversation about the school calendar, and we've heard this from several people in several towns, is they feel like with all of the workshops and all of the holidays and all of the snow days that the kids don't really go for a full week of school ever. Or very rarely. So they've changed the calendar. So they're taking out a number of holidays and, you know, religious holidays. And that is going to be, you know, hard for some people, I think, to accept. But I think that it's also important for the kids to go. And, you know, people, of course, always have the option of pulling their kids out for the day, although they hate to have them miss a day. Nothing's ever easy. And both Marshall and I agree there's something very funny about the two co-heads of the Agriculture Education Department resigning at the same time. Patrick seems to feel like there's no issue going on there, but it'll be, you know, it's hard to get these personnel conversations going. Nobody really wants to talk about them. But
very, very strange that they would do that. I just hope that the FFA and the Ag Department remain strong and stellar, because
the strongest program at that school.
Yeah,
right. And FFA Week is coming up in the end of February, and we have been in touch with Dave Moran over there, who remains at the Ag Department, and we will have something on that in the paper. But it's true, very strong and very important department
and people
for a region.
People should remember that the last major renovation project at Housatonic was funded and really started in part by the FFA when they started to go with theirs. So it's a triply important program.
And we even have tuition-paying students coming in from other towns
districts,
and other states to come to that program because it's such a good program.
We will move on to the art of highly concentrated artworks.
Yeah, Patrick went to this little art class that was being held by Emily Rutgers Fuller, and she's doing 12 by 12 art. And, of course, if you pay attention to the D.M. Hunt Library, as we do, they have that wonderful show every year of 12 by 12 artworks right around Christmas time. And I bought a beautiful piece by Zoe Fedorchenko myself. And if you've never been, you should definitely go.
All right, and Creepy Crawlers, now you go from the D.M. Hunt Library, we go over to the Scoville Library.
Isn't that quite a photo that Patrick took?
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
And you know, like, who likes snakes? I guess somebody does, but I would say they were not a popular animal in the office this week. But that's a very funny story. Patrick really is very funny, especially when you put him in a room full of little kids and they add some snakes in, and it was just, it's a very entertaining story, whether or not you like snakes.
All right. And I spoke to Sam Posey a couple of times about the IMS art competition. And this year, John Ashley of Lakeville was the first place winner, $5,000.
Yeah, that's a real prize. And so the Posey family has been active in creating this contest. And Indian Mountain has that beautiful, beautiful arts building. And the competition's held there every year. And it's usually, and well, it's always a local artist who wins. And, of course, you know, John actually does beautiful work, great photography. And they had Frank Oz back as a judge, the filmmaker, who's done a couple of my very favorite movies, including Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And he'd been living, I think he was a Cornwall resident, and I thought he had moved away from the area, but was back for this judging. So how cool is that?
Lots of obituaries, but there's one that is too late to make the paper, and I know a lot of people will be interested in. It hasn't been released yet. John Lunning passed away, and anybody who ever went to Sharon Center School, I always happened to be in Sharon Center School the first year Mr. Lunning came in. The guy was like the portrait of Dorian Gray. He just never aged.
Never aged. Very boyish photo
always,
of him.
Always a great guy. Always really know how to interact with his students.
Came in a couple times and advocated for students and families at the school.
Yeah. And he passed away this week. So our condolences to his family.
And the community. Yeah.
And as soon as, of course, the details will be announced for his services.
Yes, and actually I have them. I didn't think to bring them with me, but Kenny Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements, and we will have that. And actually, you know what? We'll post that on the internet today.
And I'll put it up on our Facebook page as well. All right, we will go on to the jumps coming back in sports.
Yes, it should be a good weekend. You know, I'd forgotten last year they got rained out. But so we have rain this week, which is not automatically bad. It's still pretty cold at night, so they should still be able to make snow. The jumps begin on Friday night with the target jumping, which is fun, and then the human dog sled race that all starts around 6 o'clock. And then on Saturday morning, there's the kids jumping, and some practices start, I think, at 11. And then there are two separate competitions, the one on Saturday and the one on Sunday. I think the jumping is usually from like 1 to 3. Come on out. If you've never been, it's just so much fun. And it's $15 per ticket, which is, you know, think about how many, you know, it's not that much you can do for $15 in the world that's as much fun as this. So,
and see eventual people that will be jumping in the Olympics because it just happens that way, because the young jumpers that become members of the U.S. Olympic jumping team,
they're all here.
Come through Salisbury.
It's a points earning day, I think, on Sunday. Is it Sunday or Saturday? Sunday.
Yeah.
So they earn points to allow them to go to the Junior Olympics. And it's just so fun. And they land right next to you. It's just great. And everybody you know is out there. Everybody brings their dogs and gets a snack. And there's hot dogs and cocoa, and it's great.
It's going to be fine. And just another quick story, the Olympic gold medalist, one of them from the United States, was at the Norfolk Curling Club.
Yeah, he was doing sort of a goodwill tour. Yeah. His name is Tyler George. It seemed adorable. And Kevin Whitcoast, the state senator, who's very glamorous, was out there and took some curling lessons. So we have some nice photos from that. And I just want to point out this little quick thing on the side. Cordelia Schiller went with me on Sunday to this thing on Green Burial. And Cordelia, who's a college student, came out and I said, you know, well, I got this and that out of it. And she said, what I got out of it is it seems really cool, but it's harder than you think. So find out a little bit more by reading her article.
All right, let's go on to the editorial page. Gosh, we only have about 7 minutes left already. 93 years and counting. And, you know, it's funny. Last year, they saw the heavy rain coming on Sunday, so they rammed everything in on Saturday.
Yeah.
Right. They did everything Friday and Saturday. And, you know, this year, they saw this rain coming, too, and they really packed the snow the jump, and they covered it. So they are, you know, these guys are amazing.
They've got feet of snow all set to go.
Yeah. They
and
are.
People don't realize they worked on the ski jump this year, and they redid it, so they have to put about one-third the amount of snow on the jump itself than they used to have to in the past. So
yeah, which, you know, it's so interesting. They have been doing this for 93 years. Yeah. Still, every year they fine-tune it and find a better way to do it. And that is amazing to me that they found a way to have it narrower, because, boy, that's very meaningful in the hours they put in. So we talk about the Salisbury ski jumps in the editorial, what is fun and why. Don't miss it. You know, go for Friday night, which is so much fun with the human dog sled racing. Not that target jumping isn't fun too, but boy, it is fun to watch these folks become teams and cooperate and compete.
Be so silly.
Yeah. And Saturday is the practice, but, you know, it looks the same to us lay people, you know, as the actual competition. These people just sliding down that hill and flying through the air. It's a lot of fun. We also have good letter from John DeHanna responding to Mark Godburn's column of January 17th. Interesting column from Bob Whalen on educational priorities and town budgets, very relevant right now. Do give that a read and do respond on this page. And Peter Riva on defense and thinking about what it really is.
All right. I want to go on once again I guess we should bring in, well, before we go there, I want to move the page over. You've got a thing on in Millerton. They've been having a Taste of Histories, and I want you guys to talk about
this. Series.
And they've been going to the different restaurants.
All the restaurants in town are taking turns in giving 10% of their profits on a given day to the Historical Society. And Carol Nealon has been doing a really nice series on the history of some of these old restaurants. And so last week she had the Chinese restaurant. This week she's got the diner, the Oakhurst Diner.
All right. Now there is actually several pages of Compass.
Compass.
Yeah.
And Valentine's Day.
It's great.
Yes, we have C.B. Wismar went to the play at the Warner Theater, which is, I think, a perfect play for February because it's cheerful and lighthearted. I'm not sure why playwrights always think murder is funny, but it seems to be a great topic.
They're all married.
Right. A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder is the name of the play, and this is what CB says, there may well be reason to find a break from the winter doldrums in the days ahead. So you've got until February 10th to see it, so that means you better get tickets now. The other thing we have is my favorite person on the planet this year in the past 2 years is Marie Kondo, who espouses a philosophy of keeping things neat and clean and not collecting junk. She's my husband's least favorite person on the planet. My husband, who's amassed 15,000 books in 5 years, all from the transfer station. We have a lovely library. There isn't one bad book in there. And he has duplicates also. So maybe if anyone needs to borrow a book, come to my house. Because he has too many books. Anyway, Marie Kondo has written this unbelievably successful book called Tidying Up with Marie Kondo, and a follow-up called Spark Joy. And her philosophy is, if something doesn't spark joy in your life, then throw it out or give it away. Just get it out of your life. And she has a TV show now on Netflix, and each episode she's with a different family that needs her help. And there's a family with a lot of small children, and she helps them figure out how to make their house neater and tidier. So it's a great show, and it's a perfect wintertime show. You can binge watch it. And then we have calendar, where it gives you lots of ideas of things that are going on. There's a talk tonight at the White Hart about the book The Edge of Anarchy, which is all about the Pullman strike. That's tonight.
Forget about all that. Go to the chocolate cake.
Let's go to chocolate cake. Alexander Wilburn has written a recipe of a cake that I must have.
It's so beautiful.
I must make it. I must have it. It has no flour, which I love. It's a European-style flourless chocolate cake.
For Valentine's Day.
Yes,
he has beautiful photos of it. Just
irresistible. Gorgeous.
And this is all around our Valentine's Day banner. Lots of ideas of what to do on Valentine's Day. All our advertisers are in there saying what they will have going, and it's coming right up.
Something about chocolate cakes from Europe. Peter Kuba used to make the greatest Black Forest cake in the history
favorite.
Of mankind.
Schwartz, what do they call it? Schwartz and Kirchen or something?
I know, but it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
He bought us one at my second wedding. He bought it to my second wedding. More people ate that than ate the wedding.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
That would be the perfect wedding. It's Black
like
Forest.
That.
That's a reason to get married again, Marsha.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Make the European-style flourless chocolate cake, Alexander tells us about.
You got to find somebody willing to marry.
Yeah, that's
that'd
true.
Be quite a search. All right, well, these stories and more in the Lakeful Journal, of course. Also at tricordernews.com and on Facebook.
And we'll see you at the jumps.
All right, have a great weekend, everybody.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That is this week in the Lakeful Journal here on Robin Hood Radio. And once again, tricordernews.com. And also, you can find them on Facebook.